Hey there, welcome to another edition of the Live Wire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank. We're talking about love this week, the good, the bad, parts that make you insane. And do not worry, we got a little something for everyone. We're going to hear from comedian Naomi Ekperigin, who hosts a fascinating and funny podcast with her actual fiancé. It's called Couples Therapy. Plus, one of our very favorite poets, Anis Mojgani, will stop by to perform a beautiful love poem that he had to update after he got divorced. That'll happen sometimes, even to poets. Then we're going to wrap things up with some music from The War and Treaty. They are married. They often sing about their relationship, the highs and the lows. Roses are red, violets are blue. But we got some live wire coming up just for you. I don't know. Look, the point is, it all gets started right after this. This episode of LiveWire is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you can call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hey, Elena.
Hey, Luke, how's it going?
Wow, you have on some celebratory Valentine's Day shades. Is this because this is your first Valentine's as an officially married person?
No, I went to the Party City and there I got like a 20-pack of these and I'm going to give them to my students for our Zoom literary reading on Friday.
Those are like the perfect look for this show that we're going to do this week because it's going to be about love. Should we get going?
Let's do it.
Molly. Are we rolling?
We're rolling.
All right. Take it away, Elena.
From PRX, it's LiveWire. Recorded from our actual houses, welcome to the LiveWire House Party. This week, comedian Naomi Ekperigin, poet Anis Mojgani, and music from The War and Treaty. I'm your announcer, Elena Passarello, and now, from a small room just off his kitchen, the host of LiveWire, Luke Burbank.
Oh, thank you so much, Elena Passarello. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We got a fun one in store for all of you. Of course, as we like to do each week, we posed a question to the LiveWire listeners. This week, we asked folks to write a Valentine to an inanimate object. And we're going to read through some of those coming up a little bit later in the show. First, though, it is time for the best news we've heard all week. This is the part of the show where we like to highlight some of the good news from the week because that is a thing that can also happen.
Good news.
Yeah, it's possible. We're going to focus on that right now. Elena, what's the best news you've heard all week?
Oh, I've been waiting for this news. The best good news is the kind of good news you're anticipating. Because, okay, you know, you're always like, uh-oh, what if it doesn't happen?
Right.
Many people, not just myself, have been waiting with bated breath to see if this particular albatross would hatch her chick this year.
This is the surprisingly old albatross, right? That's somewhere in the middle of the Pacific?
Midway Island, yes. This is a liaison albatross named Wisdom. She is the world's oldest known banded bird. She's at least 70 years old. And she, as of last week, was still sitting atop a nest with her, something like her 39th or her 40th chick, because they only lay like one egg every year, every other year. And all of these cameras were trained on her, and there's been all these like watch things all over the internet. And she, you know, co-parents with her long-term partner, Goo, or Mr. Goo.
Okay.
And because his band is G-O-0-0-0, and it's the cutest thing. There's tons of video if you want to go online and see it.
That's amazing. That's actually a perfect story for you to pick this week, Elena, because it kind of helps with the little theme we're doing here.
Oh.
Of older people and older animals doing kind of amazing things. The hottest singer on TikTok right now is not Doja Cat or even Jason Derulo. It is Amy Hawkins.
Long way
to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Farewell, Piccadilly. Farewell, Leicester Square.
This is 110-year-old Amy Hawkins. She is the oldest woman in Wales.
Oh.
And her great-grandson was visiting her when they were celebrating the fact that she became the oldest woman in Wales.
Wow.
And she apparently loves to sing. She loves to dance. She's very active. And so her great-grandson filmed her on his phone and put that rendition of A Long Way to Tipperary on TikTok. And now it's one of the more popular trending musical performances on TikTok. I love this story for a bunch of reasons. One, my friends and family are often telling me I, at age 44, am too old to be on TikTok. And now here is a person who is more than twice my age, which I feel like gives me a lot of clearance, which I appreciate. And apparently she is a total ham. She is now obsessed with her TikTok views. Her granddaughter said, she's like a clock. Once you wind her up, she won't stop. She just keeps asking, would you like another one? As in, would you like me to record another song for TikTok? She was a performer when she was like seven, and it was World War I, and this song, Long Way to Tipperary, was kind of like, it was a marching song for the British Army. And she was a little sort of, stage performer as a kid, and she loved it, but her mother thought it was a bit undignified. And so she told her that her singing career was over. And now, like, 103 years later, she's blowing up. So I guess the lesson learned is it's never too old to get that online clout. And that is the best news we heard all week. You're listening to the Livewire House Party from PRX. All right, Valentine's Day is this weekend, so we are going to be sort of talking about love on the show, which is something our first guest has really become an expert on. Naomi Ekparagon co-hosts the popular podcast Couples Therapy with her actual fiancé, Andy. They basically have real couples come on stage, you know, in the normal times. This is in front of a crowd in L.A. Naomi's also an actor and a comedian. She's got her own Comedy Central half-hour special. In fact, we're going to hear some of her stand-up right now. Take a listen to this. It's Naomi Ekparagon, recorded live at the Alberta Rose Theater back in 2019.
Yo! Yo, Portland! Yo! Look, you know we're in some trying times. Y'all listen to public radio. Y'all woke-ish, at least. But I feel like it's like when I go to new, mostly white places, I'm on edge a little, just a little. You know, the racists are out, okay? They have come out of their hidey holes like bigoted meerkats. And you have to look alive. And I feel like Portland, like, there is something about, like, the hipster dude that I am like, I get on edge. I get a little judgment. Think about it like a certain hipster dude, right? The guy who's got like the sleeve tattoos, the trucker cap, the thick beard to hide his identity. I was walking these streets of Portland. One of them passed me by. I was like, okay, are you a white supremacist or do you brine your own pickles? Which one? Which one is it? And you're not gonna know till it's too late. That's the danger of it all, you know. So I'm trying to adjust, cause the times have changed. I have myself a Jew boo that is a Jewish boo, and thank you, the love is real. But because I'm black and he's white, everyone's very like into us having kids. They're very excited for this concept. They're like, oh my God, your babies are gonna be so cute. You have to have babies. They're gonna be so cute. And it's like, it's just gonna be beige, okay? Why? Why is everybody freaking out over something that's gonna be taupe? I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't wanna have babies. I don't understand. Like, it's not that I don't like kids, but the idea of like making a baby from my womb, that feels so extra. Don't you think? It feels so, it's like, what am I trying to prove? You know, why do I have to make it? I don't think I have that great DNA. Like, is anybody sitting here like, oh, we got to get this DNA out there. There's a Nobel laureate in this uterus. Nope. Not gonna happen. You guys, I have clinical depression. I am half blind. I have had braces twice. The bloodline ends here. You know what? Draw a line. Know yourself. And the closest I've come was fostering a dog. I know dogs and children aren't the same. But I will say, fostering a dog, because I'm a cat mother. Two bouncing boys, one of whom's obese. It's a full-time job. But I really wanted a dog, and we were like, let's foster, and that can be our dipping our toes into having a dog. And here's the thing I realized, okay? I don't like people. And when you have a dog, you have to interact with people. They expect eye contact. They're trying to get in there. They're approaching, like, is she friendly? And I'd be like, no, I'm not, you know? Shut it down! That's how it was. Because this dog we had, okay, we named her Crunchy, and she was gorgeous. Okay, she had Dobby the house elf kind of ears. She had rich brown eyes like a person, all right? It was like she was telling you a story. You can't have a gorgeous dog and be mean. That's not right, okay? You cannot create content in the world and not engage with your audience, okay? I realize this dog is too hot for me. She is a conversation starter. And that's not who I am. So now she's on a farm somewhere living her best life. She is thriving. I still follow this dog on Instagram, okay? I cannot let go. I'm just like, this was once my girl. You know, very, very attached, very addicted. It's so good to be out of the house, to be in a new place, because normally I'm sitting in the house watching true crime shows. So this is a change. It's good for me. You guys, do you read books? Is that what you're into? Learning stuff about stuff? I just watch murder shows, and I have to stop. There's so many. Okay, I'm watching Snapped. I'm watching Fatal Vows. I'm watching Wives with Knives. It's real. I'm watching something I just found called Swamp Murders. Which is exactly what you think it is. You find a body in a swamp, you work your way back. And it is a full hour, okay? I'm on the edge of my seat. And I don't know why I keep watching these shows, because they're like making me so stressed out. It makes everyone a suspect. I can't relax. I was at home one time, and I was sitting at home on the couch, and I was in the middle of a run of Forensic Files. And a run is when I'm watching anywhere from 3 to 12 episodes in one sitting, all right? So I'm in for the night. And then I get a knock on my door in the middle of this. Y'all, you can't knock on my door during Forensic Files. I am on edge. I am a jungle cat in that moment. And I like go to the door and I just open it a crack. I give him half a spectacle, all right? Because if you open it any wider, he gets a foothold. That's a home invasion, all right? So you want to give it a crack. And I'm like, who is it? And he's like, hey, it's your neighbor. I'm like, which unit? You have to ask, okay? Because they'll find a way to trick you. And then he's like, I live upstairs. And he goes, sorry to bother you, but I'm putting in blinds, and I was wondering if I could borrow a drill. Borrow a drill? Okay, I seen this episode, all right? I'm not giving you a drill. It's gonna have my fingerprints on it, your fingerprints on it. They ain't cracking that case. I was shaking. I can't be neighborly. And then Juba and I got into a little fake argument about it, because I was like, don't you give him no drill. And he's like, we have to be neighborly. And, eventually he won out because he is a soul. So we helped. But I was very against it. I was so not having it. I think what I love most about my relationship now is that we can argue. Don't you? Like, I feel like once you can, like, argue and be real, you're like, oh, this is it. I can relax now. I can tell you about yourself, you know? That's all I ever wanted. Because the thing is, like, when we first moved in together, I was just so afraid. If we're living together, how will I suck in my stomach forever? You know what I mean? How are you supposed to live? It's too much. And so then, like, the first 6 months we lived together, I was just like a pregnant actress in a sitcom. You know what I mean? Like, standing behind couches to deliver my monologues. Holding large, empty boxes for no reason. Thank you guys so much. That's my time.
This is the LiveWire House Party, coming to you from PRX. I'm Luke Burbank at my house, Elena Passarello, checking in from her house. We are listening to Naomi Ekperigin's appearance on our show back in 2019. And we have to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere, because when we come back, we're going to talk to Naomi about the Couples Therapy podcast that she co-hosts with her fiancé. And we're going to put her relationship knowledge to the test, which could come in handy this Valentine's Day weekend. So do stay with us. This is LiveWire.
Vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. Oh my, there's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Go to ZBiotics.com/LiveWire to get 15% off your first order when you use LiveWire at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/LiveWire and use the code LiveWire at checkout for 15% off. Thank you to ZBiotics for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Welcome back to the LiveWire House Party from PRX. I'm Luke Burbank, here with Elena Passarello. All right, let's jump back into our conversation with comedian Naomi Ekperigin. We recorded this back in 2019 at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. Let's talk about your podcast, which I am loving. It's called Couples Therapy. It's you and your actual husband.
Well, okay, technically, have been engaged 6 years.
Is that? I spent like half of today trying to suss out what the exact status of your relationship is.
Yes, 6 year engagement, going strong.
Okay.
Yep.
You co-host this show, and what's so genius about it is you guys talk a little bit about your life and your relationship, and then also part of it is from a live show that you do in Los Angeles where you have people do comedy, kind of two people who've been in a relationship or are in a relationship or are exes do comedy together.
Yeah.
The stakes are high.
Okay, I will say we actually had one duo, two comics who were a couple. They got engaged shortly after doing our show. Was it us? Can we take that credit? I will.
I think you should.
Thank you. But no, definitely. It's really fun because it's obviously, we know a lot of comedians. He and I met in the comedy world. And so we knew how many people were couples or friends and, you know, siblings or just people who are always together. And they get to do stuff they don't normally do, right? It's totally different from the regular set. They get to be together and tell crazy stories or make us all wonder where it all went wrong.
One of the things I really love, we're talking to Naomi Ekperigin. One of the things I love about the podcast is I love hearing you and your partner talk. Your interactions are really fun. And you must get asked about this a lot. Like, what day to day, what's the experience of being partnered with somebody who is also a comedian? Like, have you heard his five jokes at this point? And are you tired of them? Like, is it actually a more fun thing than being with like a civilian?
Oh, I doubt it. Because what I learned being in this relationship, which is the longest relationship I've been in, I didn't realize how much most relationships are just like planning to watch TV together. You know what I mean? Like being in a couple is literally like, did you watch it? Don't watch it without me. And so that's most of what we're doing. You know, just like watching a show.
Yeah.
Try not to scroll on your phone.
Yeah. So do you find, I mean, are you guys joking around pretty constantly? Like, is that, as you're making the plans to watch TV, are you being funnier versions of yourself on the podcast?
I think so. We're being funnier versions, or maybe more energetic versions, if that makes any sense. Yeah. And we're not going to bicker. I don't think anyone wants to listen to two randos bicker. So we try to keep it light. And then the mic will go off, and I'll be like, why did you say that, Andrew?
Really? I'm
like, you got to go off mic. You have to respect each other on mic.
Yeah. It's working. You guys sound, like, very affectionate towards each other.
Oh, thank you. No, we do love each other. It's not a total lie. Love is real. The love is real. No. But, I mean, come on. Two comedians. It's a sad, delicate house with emotional eating. That's all we're doing. That's all we're doing.
One of the things that you mentioned on the podcast that really resonated with me, because I have the same, I don't know, sort of weird hang-up, is you, because you're a touring comic as well, and you go around the country, and you were saying how sometimes when you're going to be in a town where, you know, it's not some place where you've been a lot and know people, you get worried that, like, people aren't going to come out, or they're going to come out and resent you because, like, people think of comedy as an idea of a thing.
Right.
So they'll just come out to a comedy show, and they don't know who the comic is necessarily. They don't know if the comic style is interesting to them. A lot of bachelorette parties.
Yes.
Bachelorette parties are the natural predator of stand-up comedy, I feel.
Like, they shouldn't be allowed to have drinks. They should be forced to have water. You know what I mean? Like, something, when you see them coming in, it's like, uh-uh, don't let them. Don't ply them.
Like a zero drink maximum.
Max. Gotcha. Thank you. Yeah. But then it's, like, fun when you have a lot of first dates, because I do like to play with that awkward energy.
Yeah.
Whoever in the couple seems, like, a little bit shyer, I'll just start asking the other person questions. Are you a couple? And then it's, like, that look between them. You know what I mean? They're, like, answer me. I'm going to help you get to the bottom of your relationship in front of all these people. Real, I will do it. And we will not move on until I get my answers.
Naomi Ekperigin, everyone, right here on LiveWire. Naomi, you're obviously very smart. You obviously give great relationship advice.
Thank you so much.
We wanted, though, to really test those skills here in a little segment that we call Let's Get Quizzical.
Let's get quizzical, quizzical. I want to get quizzical. Let's see if you know your stuff.
Ooh, that was buttery.
Right? LiveWire House Band. All right, you co-host a podcast called Couples Therapy, which got us kind of thinking. A lot of the relationships in books and movies that we love, the people in those books and movies could have really used some therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how we're going to get quizzical. We're going to tell you about a couple from a book or a movie, what their particular drama was. You have to try to guess if they ended up staying together or if they broke up.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a scenario.
Okay.
In this classic book, a young woman works for a guy teaching his kids. She discovered he'd previously been married and his wife is still pretty close to him. She flees, then returns, only to find the guy's first wife has burned his house down. Do you think this couple had a breakup, or did they, in fact, make up?
Okay. What? Is this a Real Housewife book? This sounds dynamic. Now, she comes back.
Yes.
House burned down.
Yeah.
Yeah, she stayed with him.
You're 100% right.
Don't you just feel, yeah.
They did make up. This is the plot to the book Jane Eyre.
Oh, them girls back then.
Yeah, right?
You know what I mean? Just waiting for your second cousin to love you. Those were your options back then. It was your second cousin.
All right. In this epic and sprawling story, a guy drags his love all over a vast landscape, even though she is literally making him crazy. Ultimately, lets her fall into a fiery mountain during a fight. Do you think this couple got over that and made up, or did the fire basically seal the breakup?
Yeah, they broke up.
You're exactly right, Naomi. Good job. That is the plot to Lord of the Rings. That's basically Frodo and the Ring.
Oh, I see what you did there.
And being thrown. I didn't do it. I don't write any of this. Are you kidding me? Okay. In this film, a guy who works for a big corporation tries to put a woman's local store completely out of business. But it turns out there's an attraction online, even though in real life they're actively trying to destroy each other's livelihoods. Did these people end up making up or breaking up?
You know what? They ended up making up because they're both sick and suffering.
You are absolutely right, Naomi. That is the plot to You've Got Mail.
So messed up.
Do you think they stay together after the movie? After that, you know, they get together, they kiss on the bridge. Do you think, as a relationship expert, that their relationship went the distance?
I think so, but it means somebody's not healthy in that relationship. Mm-hmm. It went the distance, but that's because somebody said, I don't need a dream. That ain't right. Don't you think?
Right.
As a noted relationship expert and a relationship haver yourself, what is your opinion on rom-coms?
Okay, when I was young, I loved them. You know what I mean? Before I actually had a relationship with a person, I was like, this seems great. If I take my glasses off, it'll all happen for me.
You know? Take that pencil out of your hair. Take
exactly.
The glasses off.
A slow shake and love is possible. But then once you become an adult and realize how complicated it all is, you're like, these movies are dangerous.
Well, great job on the quiz.
Thank you so much. Perfect score.
Naomi Ekperigin, everybody, right here on LiveWire. That was Naomi Ekperigin, recorded back in 2019, right here on LiveWire. An update on what Naomi has been up to. She and her fiance, Andy, they are still going strong. I'm glad to hear somebody's relationship is working out. As is their podcast, Couples Therapy, which they're still doing, even during the pandemic. They also host a comedy show on Twitch every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. All right, this is the LiveWire House Party. Of course, each week we like to ask the LiveWire listeners a question. And this being a Valentine's weekend, we ask the listeners to write a Valentine to an inanimate object. Elena, what are folks sending in?
Well, people's Valentines took two forms, Burbank. Okay. Either like a love letter or verse, like a love poem. I want to do the letters because then I can pretend that I'm Delilah.
Oh, that's great.
I'm going to read them in like my special like love letter voice.
Here you go, sweet spirits.
Here's one from Tracy. You comfort me every day without hesitation. You give me the freedom to do whatever I want while being incredibly supportive. I love you, elastic waistband.
Now here's Peter Cetera and Amy Grant with Next Time I Fall
Next
in Love.
So that's
a love letter to their elastic waistband.
Yeah.
I have a feeling a lot of us have been really enjoying the miracle of science that is elastic over the course of the last year.
NGB, never going back.
There are just so many things that I just don't think are ever returning, and we're fine with it. Like, you know, belts.
Yes.
Snaps.
Yeah. All ladies' foundation garments. Goodbye.
What's another love letter to an inanimate object from one of our listeners?
This one's from Chris. Dear Gravity, if it weren't for you, I don't know where I'd be today. You make me feel so attractive. If I ever feel like I'm drifting away, I'm pulled right back in. Thanks for being such an important part of my life.
Oh, man. Is gravity even an inanimate object? It's like a force of the universe.
Yeah. Oh, good call. Yeah.
But no, I like it. All right. Another one if you got them.
Okay. How about a love poem?
Okay.
This is from Lori. Roses are red. Cookies are yummy. Is that really an entire box of Thin Mints in my tummy? I guess Thin Mints is the Valentine. I'm not sure.
I know that the Girl Scouts this year are teaming up with one of the delivery services that everybody's using to get stuff food delivered to their houses.
Is that right?
So just for this year, hopefully by next year, we'll all be back to full human interaction. Okay, maybe one more love letter to an inanimate object.
How about this one? This is an ode from Eileen. Ode to my camp chair. Something that doesn't love the ground is my butt after an arduous hike. Oh, chair of mine, sprung into position, uncomplaining, soft yet supportive, curving in all the right places, cradling me just so. Valentine forever.
That's like legitimately good writing. Just to let you know, this is the LiveWire House Party. And since we're talking about love this week, how about we hear some poetry from the Poet Laureate of Oregon. Woo-hoo. who is also a friend of the show. And he just has this way of putting his feelings into words in a way that always has me seeing the world differently.
Yes.
Which is one of the amazing things I think that poetry can do.
Yes.
Take a listen to this. It's our conversation with Anis Mushghani, recorded back in 2019 at the Alberta Rose Theater. Take a listen.
Evening.
Welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
What are you going to start off presenting to us here?
I was going to do a poem.
Okay.
And it's a poem called Today's Love is Brought to You by the Letter John Sands. And just right quick, my friend John Sands is a poet who, he writes these poems that when I hear him share them to people, it makes me feel like I can pay my rent in a new dance move. And so there was something about this poem after I wrote it that felt like it had been written under the shade of a John Sands tree. And so thus it's called Today's Love is Brought to You by the Letter John Sands.
This is already one of the best poems I've ever heard.
Well, that was it.
And you're just setting it up.
On for the evening.
All right, take it away, Anis.
High five me with your heart. High thousand me with your hearts. I know you have many of them. We all love many things. I love biscuits. I love little pancakes. I love cheeseburgers. I've loved more than just things that I chew with my mouth. I did love my wife. Sometimes I would chew my wife's shoulder in my mouth. Sometimes my wife, she was annoyed by this. But still, sometimes my wife did love me back. Some things that I've loved will never love me back. Random racist upon the street, while your rhetoric may anger me, I still have love for you, though you probably will not love me back. Walrus, I love you. Though were I to be around you, you would probably gore me with your tusks. Perhaps this is not a good example, as the wild unknowing of wild creatures is not necessarily the same as not loving something back, perhaps also because I actually do not love the walrus, but simply mention him here because there's a small figurine of a walrus on the coffee table as I write this poem. However, I do love the elephant. I love the elephant. However, he too would probably gore me with his tusks. Again, not out of unlove, but perhaps fear. I do not love fear, but I respect him in that he loves me, testing how well I carry the sword of my intent through the land of the midnight farm. The land of the midnight farm, it is a strange and scary place. There are perhaps serial killers and or possums lurking in its darkness. The serial killer may love me, but in no way that I wish to be loved. Their love may involve the removal of my skin and the wearing of it out to the club. The possum may love me, but I do not love the possum. In fact, I hate the possum solely because of how ugly I find the possum to be. And yes, I realize this is a very shallow reason to dislike something. So I'm trying, possum. I'm trying to not love you so much. Instead, possibly just be ambivalent to your existence, but oh, I want to hate you like I hate the thought of bee stings, black people, and beans. I put black people in there just to see if y'all were paying attention. I freaking love black people. Freaking love white people, though sometimes I find both of them to be trifling. Don't get me wrong. The only mother that I've ever had is black. The only wife that I've ever had is white. But damn, if we humans aren't a trifling animal at times. But still, I love you, you mountains of trifle and futility, of perseverance and lightness, of incessant rowing towards the sun, even while facing it, wondering why there is no forward momentum. Turn around. Look at my many hands holding up my many hearts and a many high-five salutation to you, Nina Simone, Paul Newman. So many things in this world I have loved. Rising with the sun, sleeping in late, little pancakes. And even though they didn't turn around once when she got gone, my wife's shoulders. Thank you.
That is Anis Mushghani here on Livewire. that's really beautiful. And I've heard you do that poem before when it sounds like your relationship was in a different status.
Yeah.
And now that has changed, and you keep the poem and you adjust the reality of the world makes its way into this poem.
Yes. After my marriage is over, and when it was in this like sort of like weird limbo, it was like, I remember doing that poem and it felt as if I wasn't being truthful with myself to my experience. And there's plenty of poets, friends of mine who, you know, they're able to sort of like treat certain poems as theirs as time capsules. And for me, I've tried that and it doesn't seem to work. And so specifically with this poem, it was a poem where I want to keep this in my bag of tricks, you know, like there's only so many funny poems I have, but how can I have it be what it is and still reflect the current truth? But it definitely, you know, I think there's something about the poem that became more not necessarily what it's supposed to be, but it definitely became a different and more present and resonant shape in its second incarnation.
Can you share another poem?
Yeah. The first love poem I ever wrote was 15 years ago. And the person that I wrote it for, they had posted a number of years ago a photograph on their Facebook page of a lemon tree in a little pot seated on their kitchen windowsill. And this caption that read, "See the lemon tree I grew from a seed, how big you've gotten." And I thought, that is a really, really sweet sentiment. And then I thought, that is a really, really stupid sentiment. And I had to write a poem about a lemon tree. And so this is what came out.
This is Anish Mojgani here on LiveWire.
"Oh, lemon tree, I grew from a seed. How big you have gotten. You were so little when you were a seed, and now so big. And soon you will carry such round and lovely lemons, yellow and dimpled. When they grow too big for your thin branches and they leave this kitchen of mine, ask them not to forget it, this kitchen of ours. It is my favorite room in the house. Lemon tree, when you pick up to follow, please do think of me. I will think of you. Here, when my hands are far too empty and my tongue is far too sweet, I will think of the quiet poem that was your shape. Lemon tree." "Please, bring a scarf with you. Wherever you end up, it may be cold. And if it isn't, perhaps you will one day travel to a place where it is. Thank you."
Anish Mojgani, right here on LiveWire. That was Anish Mojgani, recorded back in 2019. This is the LiveWire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank. That is Elena Passarello at her place. An update on Anish: along with being named Poet Laureate of Oregon, he was also recently included in the incredible collection African American Poetry, 250 Years of Struggle and Song. That's an anthology that is edited by another former LiveWire guest, and all-around huge poetry deal, Kevin Young.
Oh, yeah.
So do go check that out if you get a chance. Special thanks this episode to Rachel Saslow of Portland, Oregon. Rachel is part of the LiveWire member community and is generously supporting our show with a donation each month, which we are so grateful for, because without that, we could not keep doing this week in and week out. So a huge thanks to Rachel Saslow for keeping LiveWire going. This is LiveWire from PRX. Our musical guests this week are a husband and wife duo that Rolling Stone calls one of Nashville's most thrilling new acts. Michael Trotter learned how to play piano during his military service in Iraq as a means of coping with the extreme trauma that he was experiencing there. And after he came home, he started performing at music festivals, including one where he met his wife, who is a fellow musician named Tanya. They joined musical forces and became The War and Treaty. They've collaborated with Emmylou Harris. They've toured with Al Green. and they performed at the 2020 Grammys. We talked to them back in September of last year during the pandemic, and I'm so excited for people to hear this performance. It was really just one of the highlights of doing these shows from home was getting to hear the War and Treaty. So take a listen to this. Tanya and Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey,
Woo! How are you?
How are you two? Where are you joining us from today?
Home.
We're home.
Which is
all the way in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, wonderful.
Michael, I know that you've told this story endless numbers of times, but it is fascinating. And for the listeners to our show that haven't heard it, the story behind how you actually learned how to play piano is really something. Could you kind of share that with us?
Yeah. They looked at me when I got into Iraq and realized that I was the weakest link. I was one of the soldiers out of 973 at the time who absolutely did not want to be in Iraq.
Wow.
I didn't want to be there fighting. I didn't want to do anything. I wasn't patriotic. I'm like, what in the heck have I done? I've screwed my life up. Woe is me. And in order to calm me down, they read in my file that I am a music freak, that I love music. And it just so happens that one of the palaces that we bombed happened to be Saddam's son. But it was inherited. Mm-hmm. So it belonged to Saddam. Mm. But Saddam had this piano in the basement. It was an upright black piano. And I went down there and they told me, hey, on your off time, whenever you feel worried and afraid, come down here and find home. So I taught myself how to play the piano on Saddam Hussein's piano.
And you did not play any piano before this point. Like, you were just, like, doing chopsticks and, like, hitting a couple of keys. What would you start out with?
I'll be honest with you. My mother put me in piano lessons, and I was in it for half a day.
So you had half a day of piano lessons under your belt.
Yes. And the instructor called my mother and convinced her with great words that we can't use on air that I was not a good student. She needs to come get me. But, you know, I come from a musical family. My grandmother on my mother's side, she plays the piano. And my uncle Zelbert plays on my father's side. And when I was a little baby boy, I would mimic their movements and the sounds with my mouth. Mm-hmm. And I would play the back of the church pews, like, and I would do that with my mouth as, like, this little baby. And everyone just thought it was very interesting.
You're still doing it.
And Tanya, I know that the music that Michael's created and that you've created together, a lot's been talked about the emotional journey for Michael with PTSD and things like that. For you, though, I'm wondering, what's the emotional component of making music with your husband as the War and Treaty?
Really, just being vulnerable and being able to tap into the deeper levels of myself and the deeper levels of the lyrical content that we come up with. Because, you know, I think we all at some point get sad or, you know, have been slightly depressed, you know, but it's very different when you're dealing with a combat veteran who deals with combat PTSD. You know, there's a level of compassion that you have to have, and you have to go deeper in yourself to find that. You know, it's been a great journey for me, a learning journey for me as well, to learn myself, to learn the deepest levels of myself, and to learn Michael as we go along with these songs. And it's just amazing to me how many songs he can come up with and how much of the music that we make together is therapy, not just for him, but for me as well.
All right, we have to take a very quick break. I'm Luke Burbank here with Elena Passarello. This is the Livewire House Party. Don't go anywhere, though, because when we come back, we are going to hear a song from the War and Treaty. Stay with us. Livewire is thrilled to be partnering with Portland's own Portal Tea this season. Formerly known as Tea Chai Tay, Portal Tea is the premier tea company in the Pacific Northwest. They make one-of-a-kind, handcrafted tea blends like cinnamon churro chai and blueberry cream Earl Grey. Use the code LIVEWIRE, all lowercase, for 20% off at portaltea.co. Welcome back to the LiveWire House Party. I'm your host, Luke Burbank, here with Elena Passarello. Before we get back into this interview with the musical duo, The War and Treaty, just want to mention that the conversation you're about to hear does discuss the effects of PTSD, including suicidal thoughts. So heads up on that. All right, let's get back to our chat with The War and Treaty. You're going to play a song for us. What are we going to hear?
Well, we're going to actually play a song called Five More Minutes.
There's a story behind this song, as there seems to be for all of your music, right? What's the story on this one?
You know, and it's so weird because I'm starting to see a pattern here. That every story is sad, but it's okay. You know, that's why we want to liven things up a tad. But no, there is a story. In 2017, I was done with failure. I was ready to end my life by suicide, and I wasn't thinking about the state it would leave my wife and son in. I was just thinking about how they could financially get some sort of break. And that's the thing I haven't explained to other interviewers, but I would say, you know, life insurance money. I mean, I had tried everything as a male, as a man, and as a husband and a father, and I just kept getting slapped in the face, door shut. And I was tired. So somehow love snitched on me and told my wife that, hey, this idiot over here is planning to do something kind of crazy that will alter this family. And my wife then notified the Albion Police Department, small town in Albion, Michigan. And they came to my home, and a wife let them in. And I was sitting on the stairs, and she walked over to me. And I had tears in my eyes. I was flooded. And she got on her knees in between my legs and grabbed me by my face and said, honey, I know you got this idea in your head of when you want to do this. I know you're tired, but I need five more minutes to love you. Please, just five more minutes. She would say, stay with me. Don't leave just yet. Just stay with me. Five more minutes. That's all I need. And the police, they were like, come on, Michael, listen to her, man. 5 minutes, you know. And I feel it's important for the listeners and our fan base and y'all's to know another side of our men and women that serve, especially in the police department, especially in our country, given the current climate. Not all are the same. These police officers, they weren't just trying to end this situation. They really believed in my wife's love for me, and they really believed in who I was to the community. And they really put it out there. Come on, Michael, man, we need you. You know, which reminds me of that quote Dr. King gave, judge not by the color of the skin, but judge by the contents of the heart. And apparently the contents of my heart was being judged at that moment. So I looked in my wife's eyes, and after her pleading and asking me for five more minutes, love then snitched on her and told me that she needed me and my son needs me and I need to be here. And I gave her 5 minutes, and today, 2020, we're still in those 5 minutes.
Yes.
Wow. Whew. Let's hear that song then. This is The War and Treaty here on the LiveWire House Party.
Thank you, everybody, and five more minutes.
Five more minutes to love.
you tasted a wine, smoked a little wisdom in the rain. Oh, are you feeling la-la-la-la-la, getting a little crazy? Stay with me, don't leave just yet. We got all night, so please forget about
That was The War and Treaty here on Livewire. Their latest album is Heartstown. You can keep up with them over at their website, including live stream shows that they're doing over at thewarandtreaty.com. All right, before we get out of here, a little preview of next week's show. We are going to be talking to the rapper Talib Kweli from Blackstar and many other things. This guy has had a really, really interesting life and career. Speaking of interesting lives and careers, we're also going to talk to George Saunders. It's pretty much good as it gets when it comes to writers. I know, right? And then we're going to also throw in some music from an artist named Gillette Johnson, who is this incredible musician that I've just become acquainted with. So it is going to be an all-around amazing show next week. Do not miss it. We also want to get your answers to our listener question, which is where our social media manager, Ariana Donneville, comes in. Hey, Ariana.
Hey, Luke.
What is the question for the listeners this coming week?
What's your favorite word or phrase?
Whoa.
Yeah.
That can be read over the radio.
Right.
Exactly.
What's the best way for the LiveWire listeners to submit the answer to the listener question?
Listeners can submit their answer on our social channels. We're on Instagram and Twitter at LiveWire Radio, as well as on Facebook.
All right, Ariana, thank you so much. That is going to do it for our show this week. A huge thanks to our guests, Naomi Ekperigin, Anis Mojgani, and The War and Treaty. LiveWire is brought to you in part by Alaska Airlines.
Laura Haddon is our executive producer. Heather D. Michelle is our executive director. Tim Harkins is our production director. Our producer and editor is Melanie Sevchenko. And Ariana Donneville is our marketing manager. Our house band for this episode was Ezra Rose, Ethan Fox Tucker, and A. Walker Spring, who also composed our music. Molly Pettit is our technical director, and she mixed this episode.
Additional funding provided by the Oregon Arts Commission, a state agency funded by the state of Oregon and the National Endowment for the Arts. LiveWire was created by Robin Tenenbaum and Kate Sokoloff. This week, we'd like to thank member Martin Jones from Austin, Texas. For more information about our show or how you can listen to our podcast, head on over to livewireradio.org. I'm Luke Burbank for Elena Passarello and the whole LiveWire crew. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. Wouldn't it be amazing to have a piping hot episode of LiveWire delivered right to your heart and ears each week? Well, guess what? That can happen when you subscribe to the LiveWire podcast feed and you'll get the joy of surprising conversation every week. So go ahead and do it. It's super easy. You click on the button at the top of your podcast app and bam, you are LiveWire subscribed. And if you're still, you know, feeling the love, if you're enjoying the show, hey, maybe you could hook us up and leave us a quick review. That'll help more people find out about LiveWire. And thank you.
From PRX.